This episode is made possible thanks to listeners like you. Want to support independent food radio? Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today.
Hey there. Hi. This is A Taste of the Past, and I'm your host, Linda Palaccio. We are in the middle of summertime as we record this, and I mean hot summertime. So when I say pickles, that's something we need in the summertime for all our grilling of hamburgers and hot dogs and a picnic. You can't have a picnic without pickles. But there's a lot more to it than just the pickles we think of when I say summertime cookout. Pickling, pickled vegetables. Pickling is an ancient method of preserving foods. And even though the preservation need is no longer the major importance of pickling today in our gastronomic world, pickled foods are valued more as a food that excites and delivers those assertive, bold, and spicy sometimes flavors. The first mention of pickled vegetables is said to have appeared in an ancient Chinese manuscript more than 9,000 years ago. And archaeologists believe that ancient Mesopotamians were regularly pickling foods as far back as 2400 BC. Throughout history, pickling has preserved crops and provided essential foods for the masses. Pickles, in their myriad forms, are indeed a global food, as food writer Jan Davison states in her book, The Global History of Pickles. And she writes, they're also a modern food. Growing interest in naturally fermented vegetables, pickles by another name, means that today, in the early 21st century, we are seeing a renaissance in the making and consumption of pickles. From the home's cook pantry of pickles and artisanal jars sold at local markets to the vast array of commercially produced pickle products on supermarket shelves, pickled vegetables are popular. In the Western world, pickling is defined as immersing foods in brine of salted water or in vinegar. But what is the difference between fermented pickles and vinegar brined or quick pickles, as we call them? I've asked fermentation expert Jory Jane, MD, to answer that question. Jory is an herbal alchemist with a focus on terroir. She practices her unique process of whole utilization, maximizing the yield from each ingredient through the processes of fermentation, preservation, and extraction. Jory teaches courses and workshops in fermentation, and her vinegars, fermented chili sauce, and Worcestershire sauce in particular are available through her website, LadyJanesAlchemy.com. And in full disclosure, I should mention that she's also my daughter-in-law. Hi, Jory.
Hi.
And yes, it's okay that you're my daughter-in-law and you're on my show, and I gave you all that all the information about you, because you are indeed, well, you're probably the foremost fermentation expert that, you know, not in the mainstream right now. And I have to say, I'm always learning something from you, aside from taking your wonderful vinegar course, which I highly recommend to anyone, and I have wonderful vinegars to show for that. I mean, you take a deep dive into the ancients. You don't just work on today's fermentation methods with fancy equipment, although you do have some pretty fancy equipment in your laboratory, I will say. But you've gone back to the ancients and read many of those texts devoted to fermentation. Have you seen anything that, you know, basic, aside from sterilization, you know, Louis Pasteur and mason jars and things like that, have you seen any major changes in terms of you know, straight full-on fermentation processes?
Going back to ancient is definitely more straightforward and very simple. You know, you're using crocks, and ancient techniques are reliant on indigenous or native fermentation, and that means that, you know, you're not adding anything to jumpstart your fermentation, whether it's buying yeast that was produced in a laboratory to jumpstart fermentation and initiate a particular flavor. Ancient methods is relying on what exists in the air around you and what exists even on your body. So to me, that is what triggered my excitement around fermentation, was reading those sort of old methods, and that is how I ferment. I am not an expert around fermentation when it comes to any additives. I'm not against it. I think that on a commercial level, it is almost necessary to not do native fermentation, because if you're producing on a commercial level, you need consistency, you need the exact pH, the exact acidity, and you want the flavor to be the same for all of your customers. So I was very turned on, to ancient methods, because I like the fluctuations, and I think it's most unique. So to answer your question, modern sort of representations I see more are people using these, purchased yeasts, and even some vessels have changed. There have been some new inventions of airlock methods that I haven't found one that I think beats sort of the old school method, but it's still pretty new, and I'm sure something will come forward at some point.
Oh, interesting. I can see that commercial operations, definitely, not only do they need consistency, but then they're working on a timeline too. They got to churn it out.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I had mentioned pickles, meaning fermented foods generally, but also the popularity these days, especially for a lot of home cooks, just to make some quick pickles. You know, you want to pickle some red onions for dinner tonight, or you want to put up some, pickled beans, which are refrigerator pickles too. But what is the major difference in the fermented pickles and the vinegar brine pickles? Or what is lacto-fermentation, I guess I should say?
Sure, yeah. So like when you say a fermented pickle, you're referring to a method referred to as lacto-fermentation. And then a quick pickle is a vinegar method. So I should say what lacto-fermentation is. Lacto-fermentation doesn't have any milk or dairy products in it. I know a lot of people get nervous.
It is. It's very
like, lacto.
Yeah.
Lactic. but ultimately, this is a very ancient method of converting glucose, that it exists in pretty much everything. And it's converting the glucose into lactic acid. And it's done by basically removing any free oxygen and submerging product in a salt brine. So ancient method is using cucumbers as an example. Ancient method is submerging the cucumbers in a salt brine. You put a weight down so that the salt brine comes a few inches above the cucumbers, and no oxygen can get into it through the brine that's existing on the top layer. And being devoid of any free oxygen, the glucose in the cucumbers start converting into lactic acid, and it makes for this very acidic process so that it naturally preserves itself. Modern methods now are you can put stuff into a jar with an airlock and a little water chamber so the gases can escape, but the oxygen can't get in. And then I know there are people even doing some quick fermentations in cryovac bags.
Huh.
That's a whole different story, and I have a lot of opinions on that, and I won't waste your time on that one. But, the lacto-fermentation is basically a natural process of conversion. And a lacto-fermented pickle is going through that process. If you put vinegar over cucumbers, you're not fermenting. You're just preserving. The fermentation process was in making the vinegar itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the main difference between a lacto-fermented pickle and a classic quick vinegar pickle. One is fermented and one is preserved with a fermented product. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Interesting. And the quick pickles, they have to stay refrigerated, or if you heat them, are they shelf stable?
So if you're doing a quick pickle and you haven't like pasteurized your vinegar or anything, like you make your vinegar, it's raw and you haven't pasteurized it, and you pour it over your cucumbers and hot vinegar over the cucumbers and that's it. technically they could stay out on the counter, but fermentation can continue. So to prevent fermentation and to have a desired product, it's best to put them into the refrigerator. You know, our Food and Drug Administration will probably say otherwise, but most of these methods were created pre-refrigeration. That's why they were created. It was to preserve food, and there wasn't a way to cool things down and stuff. I don't feel like they need to, but it will continue to ferment, and it could change the flavor over time.
Right. Well, and I think that this quick pickling method was something that probably got a lot of the home cooks interested in pickling, because then they said, sure, this is so easy, I can do this. And then go a step further, and before you know it, they become like you. How did you get so interested in fermentation? As a former chef, how did you get so interested in fermentation?
Oh my gosh. It's funny. I wish I had I should probably work on this answer, because I'm always like, I'm not 100%. I think that somewhere deep down inside, I have always had an interest. I do remember the first time I ever dealt with a fermented process was in sixth grade in math class. And one of the projects we had to do was basically make a bread starter. And it was feeding exact amounts each day. And this is something we did at home. And I ended up baking, this bread. And I was blown away. I'd never experienced a flavor like that. And then I think it kind of stuck with me over years. And I tried homemade vinegars from a woman when I was in high school. And I think just over the years, it all kind of converged when I had learned, the basics in commercial kitchens. I was also sort of retaining a lot of the waste that was happening in these commercial kitchens. And I was just kind of thinking, what can I do with this? And if I ever have my own restaurant, I want to make a difference. So when we opened Fish and Game, I was able to sort of apply all the things that I had been teaching myself and storing away, and I just kind of blew up from there.
Well, and Fish and Game, I will explain to people, that is the restaurant that you own with your husband, my son.
Yeah, Zach, we opened Palacio. It together. I pretty much at this point, I let him take the reins. I think I might be too emotional. I'm not sure.
But you still produce. But you still produce a lot of products that are used in the restaurant, right? The Hudson Valley.
I'm still doing the larder and a lot of trying to come up with interesting methods of whole utilization with what is being left over from production, ultimately, from prep.
Talk about that a little bit, whole utilization. I mean, people are really into sustainable businesses, and nothing seems less sustainable or not whole utilization than a food service place because
100%.
Of all the waste. Yeah. So what is your special whole utilization method?
You nailed it. It is impossible to be zero waste with having a restaurant. It's impossible. It's do what we can. And my directive was more of, seeing things that aren't presentable, especially when we're working with so many farmers, and the majority of them are organic farmers. So we're dealing with some pieces that have bruises or, little bug bites from the field that you can't put on a plate, because just the masses want beauty. And you can't put something that has flaws on the plate, because then they think the dish is flawed. So it was what can we do? Because in New York City kitchens for a long time, and while I was working in them for other restaurants, all this stuff went into the garbage. New York City didn't have compost set up yet, which they do now, which is great. And there isn't space, to have fermentations. And it just also isn't taught in culinary school to be forward thinking with food waste. And I think we're getting there. But to me, it was, what can I do? Because I don't like to waste flavor. It was more about the flavor, and flavor is money when you have a restaurant. So if I have the tops to beets and there isn't a use for it in a dish, you know, what can I do with that? You know, what can I turn it into? Even if it's as simple as just making a beet top pesto for a special you want to run next week, or, you know, finding a creative way to press them in different lacto-fermented salt brine methods and have this very elevated next level product that can be added to another dish just to heighten it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also have a very extensive all-natural wine program, and we have since the day we opened. And those wines, they don't have stabilizers, so they fall apart quickly. And if you open a bottle to be poured by the glass, and we're a restaurant that for many years we were closed from Monday to Wednesday, the wine that was open and wasn't completed Sunday night wasn't good for service on Thursday. So what do we do with that wine? You don't put it down the drain. So I started turning it into vinegar. Mm. And since the day we opened Fish and Game, we have never purchased citrus to adjust the acidity in the dishes. It's all been done with vinegar that has been recycled and put back into the dishes in the kitchen.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I know that you do a lot of other tinctures and extractions and other things that have health and beauty benefits. And everyone touts the benefits, the health benefits of lacto-fermented foods, and it's good for your gut and whatever. What is there anything in what in particular do you find about the health advantages of some of these fermented foods?
Sure. I mean, you know, when you're fermenting in a way to preserve the ingredient, you are preserving the nutrients that exist in the product that you're using. There is some misinformation out there that claims you're adding nutrients, and it's not possible. There aren't nutrients in the air that go into your fermentation tank and boost what exists. But you are preserving what nutrients exist in the product itself, where if you cook something, nutrients can retain, but they lose a lot. They lose a lot because the cells open and they sort of express their nutrients that are in the cell walls, and then they evaporate out through the heat being applied. So, you know, when you're fermenting something, you're retaining it into that liquid. So the vegetable, if you're doing a cucumber, whatever nutrients exist in that cucumber, retain in the cucumber itself and then also into the brine. So both the liquid and the product itself are very nutritious. You know, and then it retains a lot of the omega-3 fatty acids and then active enzymes. So that's really great for digestion and keeping sort of the gut flora in balance.
Hmm, interesting. And then if it's just a quick pickle, you can always drink the vinegar, right?
Yeah, and vinegar has a ton of health benefits as well. You know, and the lactic acid and acetic acid, which ultimately vinegar is acetic acid, you know, they have different benefits. They're not the same.
Uh-huh.
And they're both really, you know, beneficial for the body.
Well, as I say, I'm always learning something from you, and I invite my listeners to learn from you too. There are so many different types of fermentation. Just the other day, I noticed you were explaining and posting something on whatever, Instagram or whatever, about all these different ways that you took a wild plum and fermented it, apricot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, a wild apricot, and fermented it like five different ways.
Yeah, I mean, well, some were fermented, some were dry, but yeah, it's applying it in different ways. You know, I mean, I'm a small household. You know, there was another thing, you know, for me with getting started with fermentation and being self-taught, so many books and even older books, the batch sizes were always like a gallon or more.
Right.
And it's like when it's just three people in your house, a gallon is like a year plus supply of sauerkraut. You only need like a couple of, you know, spoonfuls a day for health. Otherwise, you know, for a condiment, again, it's still a couple of spoonfuls. So I wanted to, you know, find ways to not have to create huge batch sizes. So I, you know, all my work is in ratio bases, which means any size can apply, any batch size can apply. But, you know, when I found these apricots, I mean, I just freaked out. I've never had a wild apricot in my life. And 39. Like, it blew my mind. And I had a lot of them, and I didn't want to just jam, you know.
Right.
A few pounds, so I just went into a bunch of small, you know, processes. So I have a few different interesting flavors, ultimately.
Interesting. Yeah, it was. I found that fascinating. And what I really need to do is come and take a photograph of some of the jars. Jory has these lines of jars on shelves, both in the restaurant and in one of her homes. It's just colorful, beautiful. It's artwork. It really is artwork. So tell the listeners, I mean, you, yes, self-taught, but then you've gone and studied with fermentation people and taken, laboratory courses and things. But you also teach, and you were, in fact, invited to do a workshop at Yale and did a taught people there. Where can people find out about your courses and your products?
Pretty much everything is on my website, which is ladyjanesalchemy.com, and that's Jane with a Y, J-A-Y-N-E. And also Instagram, which is at Jory Jane. And I'm not on Facebook. I was for years. It just doesn't work with my brain.
How many different mediums do we need?
Right? Not compute. Yeah. So those are really my two main ways of getting information out there. Ultimately, I am trying. It's been a lot of different things going on, but I'm really trying by the fall to have some online courses
set up.
Terrific. Yeah, people can just log in and get going on information without me having to be in place, which I do enjoy. It was fun for me to teach. I did enjoy it. It was incredible to meet so many people, but it's difficult to be physically there at different times. And then also with the fermentation for the classes, you have to have different stages. And it is like it would take me about 4 to 6 months in preparation before class.
Right.
It's kind of a lot when I have other work going on. So.
Well, it was definitely worth it. I recommend them. And again, that's Lady Jane with a Y, janesalchemy.com.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Jory. It's, as I say, always learned something, and we'll bring you back for a further discussion of fermentation another time.
That sounds fun. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. And stay tuned. We're going to take a short break, because then we're going to come back and talk about cucumber pickles, the summertime pickles, and some of the top tasting pickles in America year after year, when we speak with the director of marketing from Clausen Pickles. So stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by you. As an independent, member-supported nonprofit, the amazing content you hear on Heritage Radio Network is made possible thanks to our generous community of members and partners. For 10 years, HRN has been a defining voice in America's food movement, and we never would have made it this far without you. Join us in celebrating an amazing decade of food radio and support our summer fund drive by becoming a member of HRN. You can choose from our member gifts and will receive exclusive discounts on HRN events. We truly believe that with your help, we can change the world and our food system one bite or sound bite at a time. But there's no food radio without you. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate before July 31st to do your part to ensure a bright future for your favorite food podcasts.
Hi, we're back, and you're listening to A Taste of the Past. Now, you heard all about fermentation and vinegars, and I talked about how pickling is such an ancient method of preservation. And that was 2400 BC in Mesopotamia. But when we think of pickles, the cucumber pickle is usually what comes to mind. And in 2030 BC, you know, it was a little earlier, a little sooner after than 2400, cucumbers, which were native to India, were introduced to the Tigris Valley, Mesopotamia, where they were, in fact, being pickled. Then by the 16th century, thanks to Christopher Columbus, cucumbers were being grown in the New World, pickled and fed to explorers and armies. By the 17th century, Dutch farmers in New York were growing cucumbers and sold them to dealers who cured them in barrels. They were growing a lot of cucumbers. And they sold them to dealers who would cure them in barrels and brines of varying flavors and sold them at market stalls. In fact, the word pickle is derived from a Dutch word, I'm not sure, pekel or pickle, which means brine. And then we adopted it to mean pickle, the pickle the variety that we know. And the cucumber growth and pickling spread throughout the country and, well, throughout the world. And, of course, I don't need to tell you, but today you go to the supermarket or you go to any market and the shelves or the stalls are lined with jars of pickles and choices. But in a recent blind taste test of pickles, one stood out for clean, vibrant flavors and that all-important crunch. And it's not the first time these pickles have been one of the top choices. Those were Claussen pickles. They consistently score at or near the top for the best taste preference. And who knows what you mean? You're not sure what you know. What are you tasting for? What do you like in a pickle? What do I like in a pickle? But somehow they arrived at this pickle, crispy, good tasting. And this brand started in 1870 outside of Chicago, Illinois. And it's still there or nearby. It's one of the biggest in the market share for refrigerated pickles. And today I am pleased to have with me the director for marketing of Kraft Heinz. Yeah, you heard that right, Kraft Heinz. We'll talk more about that. Zach Meyer, representing Claussen Pickles. Welcome, Zach.
Thanks so much for having me today, Linda.
I read by the Department of Agriculture that the average American consumes about 9 pounds of pickles a year. How can that be true? I mean, they got to be pretty heavy pickles for me. I don't.
Yeah, we certainly listen to our consumers and know that there is a lot of pickle passion from the pickle people out there. But really, you know, when you think about where consumer interest is going and what they're interested, consumers are looking for fresher products. They're looking for products that are less processed. And so at Claussen, we're so glad to be able to provide a product where the number one ingredient is fresh cucumbers. And so what we've seen with kind of the strength of Claussen makes a lot of sense when you think of what consumers are looking for and how they're eating differently today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that the company has been around since 1870, I mean, and they're doing things the same way, I would imagine, right?
It really, in a lot of ways, that's true. It started as a family business in Chicago. It was a German vegetable farmer by the name of Klaus F. Claussen, and he had a truckload of cucumbers that he couldn't sell. And so, ever the entrepreneur, he said, "Well, rather than let them go to waste, I'm gonna pickle them and see if I can sell them." And that was really the start of the Claussen company, and it became a family business, and it really has been a family business for generations since the humble origins in 1870.
Well, they were in one place for so many years, the factory that was, tell me about that. Where was that? In the
Yes. Yeah, so the factory today, it actually remains, as you mentioned in the intro, very close to its roots in Chicago. So our factory today is in Woodstock, Illinois, so it's a little over an hour outside of Chicago. And it really has retained a lot of that feel of a family business. I've had the chance to work on Claussen for a little over 10 years, and so I've been to the facility numerous times, and it's always really rewarding for me to visit the factory and to see workers who are part of generations that, you know, their parents worked at the factory and they're working there, and seeing the pride that they have, both in the Woodstock community, but also in Claussen as a brand, and continuing to make really high quality products. I think if Klaus were around today, I think he'd be proud of what his company's become.
All right. Well, now I mentioned that Claussen is the biggest, has the biggest market share for refrigerated pickles. So these are, as we were just talking earlier with the fermentation expert, these are not fermented pickles. They're quick pickle, brined vinegar pickles, right?
Yeah, so they, as you mentioned, they are fermented under refrigeration. And so I think there's a couple things that make that unique. First is being under refrigeration. There's incredible care around the condition of the cucumbers. So they're never heat treated, never pasteurized. Really from the time they're picked and put on a truck, they're kept in refrigeration as that truck makes its way to Woodstock upon delivery, and really until it's put in the jar with the brine, it's kept refrigerated to for minimal processing. And I think that's a big part of why we do so well with consumers in terms of taste test, color, and the crunch, as you mentioned. The other thing is that because we source only fresh cucumbers, you know, we have to minimize the amount of time from when they're picked to when they're put in the jar because we don't heat treat or pasteurize. And in fact, it's really about 7 to 10 days from the time it's actually picked off the vine to when it is actually placed in the jar. So a lot of care is taken kind of throughout the whole process of harvesting the cucumbers to bottling them to make sure that it's at maximum freshness when it's put in the jar.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there a particular area you have special growers? I mean, where are the cucumbers sourced? Is that part of the secret in the jar?
We think so. Cucumbers, the optimal growing condition for cucumbers are, cucumbers like it warm and hot and humid. So it's really in the summers when they grow the best. And so because we're constantly sourcing cucumbers and we constantly need an incoming supply of fresh cucumbers to package, we like to say that we follow the sun to get the freshest cucumbers. So when it's winter for most of the United States, we're actually sourcing cucumbers from our growers in Mexico. And then when it starts to be spring, then we're able to source from the southern states, so Florida, Texas, and Arizona. And then at this time of year, now that we're in the middle of summer, we're actually sourcing from the East Coast and from the Midwest states. And then as it gets fall, we'll kind of go back down. But we're committed to always providing the freshest cucumbers available. And so it's a wide-ranging network of growers. Again, a lot of family businesses there that we've been working with for generations. But we believe it's worth it to be able to provide the freshest cucumbers possible.
Yeah. Well, one of the notes that was sent to me in preparation for the show was that in the past 18 months, Clausen has seen a 10% increase in sales. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, we have seen good growth in the brand recently. I think there's a couple things. First is, as I mentioned earlier, consumers are looking for fresher products. They're looking for products that are minimally processed. They're increasingly shopping the perimeter of the stores. And Clausen is a product that delivers on what consumers increasingly are looking for. I think the second reason is just sort of this strong commitment to quality. Throughout the generation, we are committed to the way that we make our pickles. It's a painstaking process. It's not the easiest way of making pickles, but we believe it delivers the best pickles, and that quality has been a consistent element of Clausen throughout the generations.
I read where you are set to process. The factory is set to process over 500 tons of cucumbers into pickles this year. 500 tons. Wow. So, because you mentioned they source the cucumbers throughout the year, so the factory is in process and all year long making these cucumbers. It's not a seasonal thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We make throughout the year to feed the passion of all the pickle people that are out there.
And they are, yeah. Well, certainly these taste tests that, you know, these independent blind taste tests that go on and Clausen comes out top. I mean, that's certainly got to help. You know, they're done by reputable, food bloggers and magazines and places that people read about food and choices. I would imagine that has an impact for sure.
Yeah, we're certainly very, very proud of how we stack up, and are proud to be kind of the leading refrigerated pickle in America.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned that you are director of marketing at Kraft Heinz, and this is Clausen Pickles. Go into that one a little bit. I mean, what about Heinz 57 varieties of pickled foods? Is there a little competition there within the company? When did that all come about?
Sure. So I've been with the company for over 10 years. And really, Kraft Heinz, our mission at Kraft Heinz is to be the best food company, growing a better world. And part of being the best food company is about providing the highest quality of products. And so that's something that, since Kraft and Heinz became one, the commitment of quality to preserving the quality of Clausen is something that has absolutely been maintained. And our process and the steps that we take to provide the highest quality cucumbers and the highest quality pickles as we can has not changed at all in the past ownership. Under the current ownership, and that's been something that's really rewarding to see. And if anything, the commitment to Clausen has only enhanced sort of since Kraft and Heinz became one. And we're happy to offer two brands that of pickles that we're really proud to offer to consumers.
Well, they always say, competition is a good thing. I mean, if you own a restaurant, it's good when another restaurant opens next door, because that makes people, think twice and make good choices. Mm-hmm. Tell me, is there anything new that in the way of pickles? I mean, pickles oftentimes are regional specialties. I mean, people prefer heavy dilled pickles, or some people, particular from the Eastern European influences of the all the Jewish immigration, like the heavy garliced pickles. And we have spicy pickles, bread and butter pickles. Do you find regional sales differ in the flavors?
No, we see one thing that we see certainly a regional difference and a fun application of the Clausen product is the Kool-Aid pickle. I don't know if you talked about that at all.
Oh, no, but I did read something online about a Kool-Aid pickle. Yeah. I thought that was just one of those.
I didn't believe it. Yeah, I didn't believe it at first either. I thought it was maybe an urban legend, but it's something we hear about from consumers and have definitely seen and gotten a lot of feedback that Clausen makes the best Kool-Aid pickle. So basically taking Kool-Aid and mixing it in with the brine and kind of storing overnight. I think I've heard it's a great way to kind of finish a barbecue meal. And so it's something that has spread throughout the nation, but it's certainly popular in the South. And there are some regional variations, to be sure, beyond the Kool-Aid pickle. I think in the Northeast, which certainly has a strong heritage of pickles, we sell a half-sour whole that is primarily sold in the Northeast. So mm-hmm. Kind of with the deli culture, and we see a little bit preference for that flavor there. But overall, I think just kind of overall, as pickles have increased in popularity and you're seeing more and more pickle flavored across the grocery store, it's something that we see not nearly being as regional as it maybe once was, and certainly is popular nationwide.
Uh-huh. I get it. So aside from the Kool-Aid pickle, I'm not sure I'm going to try that one. but there are a lot of what they call copycat Clausen pickle recipes for home cooks, home picklers. Pinterest, in particular, seems to be just flooded with different, they call copycat Clausen pickles. But then there's a Clausen refrigerator pickle recipe. Is that Clausen's own recipe, or is this just something that somebody came up with and called it a Clausen refrigerator pickle recipe because it tastes like that? I don't know. Do you know? Have you heard about that?
We're aware of that. I think imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Indeed, yes.
I love that consumers, but I think we're more proud to be kind of the gold standard that a lot of folks out there are trying to replicate. I like to think that the process that we have is often imitated, never duplicated. But pleased that there are folks out there that are kind of seeking inspiration and seeing Clausen as the gold standard.
Well, indeed, it is... It's certainly I will say that I know, and I have tasted them and love them. They're very crispy. I love crispy pickles. I think that was pickle expert was tasting pickles and said, and who doesn't love a crunchy pickle, right? You got to have the crunch. So that definitely have that in the Clausen pickles. Well, anything new coming up that, that consumers should be looking for in terms of, in varieties or flavors of Clausen pickles?
Yeah, I'd say stay tuned. We're always keeping abreast of kind of what trends are in the market, what consumers are looking for, and we're always listening to our fans and our customers as well, and listening to their feedback. So, stay tuned, and you'll see.
Yeah, well, terrific. Well, Zach Meyer, thank you so much. It's been very interesting to learn about the pickle industry from the source, and I'm so happy for you and for the company that Clausen got the top testing. I think maybe I'm going to do a blind test. I don't know how I'm going to manage that, but I'm going to do some pickle tasting, and I'll let you know.
I look forward to hearing the results of your test.
Okay, terrific. All right. Well, you have a good day, and thanks for sharing your information with us. And thank you to my listeners for listening in, because, you know, we really do need listeners. We are a listener-supported station. If you have heard any of our summer drive pleas during the break, you'll know that we are listener-supported. And I'm assuming that you listeners listen to my show because you're interested in learning something new about food and dining throughout history. And that's why I do the show. For the very same reasons. I love learning about the history of food and dining and what was going on and how that has evolved and changed. Something else has evolved, and that's Heritage Radio Network. For 10 years, Heritage Radio Network has been educating and empowering listeners to better our food system. And this year, we're marking a decade of this revolutionary food radio, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. Join me in supporting HRN's Summer Fund Drive by making a donation before July 31st, because it's our summer drive and we're going to try to wrap it up July 31st. As a member-supported nonprofit, my show and all of HRN's work is only possible thanks to listener support like you. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now and make a gift of any amount and join the HRN community by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.
A Taste of the Past is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.